The shamans may have known ways to interact with it through different ceremonies. And, you know, that may have been involved with, you know, the drummings, the chanting that they did. They did, like, vocal harmonics.
And what was the significance of that? Was that almost like those sounds, those five sounds we heard in the movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Well, there might be something like that. There's a book, Jonathan Goldman's Healing Sounds, that talks about how the shamans may have used vowel sounds, you know,
yes.
that would go up to the harmonic range. There's a very interesting device called, there was a pre-Columbian Peruvian whistling vessels that many people who hear them seem to enter an altered state and have some pretty incredible visionary type experiences and out of the body experiences. And they often seem to put them on a path where they're looking for something meaningful in their lives, and it redirects a lot of people into a spiritual and looking into deeper meanings of ancient history and their connection.
And you called them Peruvian whistling vessels?
Right. They were apparently they originated in Ecuador about, you know, 1200 BC. And they were around and were imported down into Peru till about shortly after 1532. Of course, in 1532, the Spanish arrived, and everything changed at that point. But they soon disappeared. But many of the cultures had these down there, and we know that they were in all these different tombs. They were buried with them. They were considered very special, important to them.
No, exactly, though. What were they?
Well, for a long time, the archaeologists thought that they were simply very, you know, decorative water collection things.
Were they big or small?
Well, they're not that big. They're you can carry them around like a jug. They were like jugs.
Okay.
And let me tell you this story. A gentleman in Pennsylvania in 1972 by the name of Daniel Statkinoff was an antiques collector, colonial American antiques, and he was at an auction where one of these objects had been. And out of curiosity, he thought he'd buy it. He bought it for about $40, which, you know, was a real bargain.
Oh, my God, that's a steal.
And he had it just in his house one day, and it was about 4 weeks later, and he took it off the shelf and looked at this. It has a little spout thing on it, and he decided to blow into it. And he just kind of, for the fun of it, just kept blowing into it, and it made this real high-pitched whistle sound. Next thing he knew, it was like he was out of the body, flying among the stars. And went into like a dark cloud, and he felt, you know, he wanted to come out of it. It was really, this was some place he didn't want to go. He was all right till he saw this dark cloud. And then he came to, and he was like perspiration all over his forehead, you know.
Oh, gosh.
And he looked at the vessel. He knew somehow blowing into that vessel had caused this experience.
I want one of these things.
Well, he went to a New York museum to talk to an archaeologist, and he explained what had happened to him, except, you know, he didn't go into all the detail about the cloud and everything, just that he went out of his, it was like he went out of his body. And the archaeologist said, well, we've never known anyone to blow into him, just to, you know, we thought they were just for, you know, carrying water around. What you experienced is something like one of those hallucinogens that they would have taken. You know, San Pedro cactus or something.
Or ayahuasca or something like that.
Yeah. And so at that point, he felt that there was, you know, he'd never been a person who was of a new age or spiritual persuasion, but he decided that there was something more, something very important about these objects. And he wanted to find out all he could.
Mm-hmm.
And he went all over the country. He even got involved with UCLA and managed to get 73 of these vessels together, two of them from museum, uh, two, Well, from two museums and private collectors, and assembled 73 of them for a sound lab out there at UCLA to study, you know, the sound frequencies and try to understand them better, you know. And in the process over the years, there was he took on an apprentice by the name of Don Wright, who after his experience in 1980, Don Wright was going to Boston College, studying psychology and theology, and he was at a house one day. They were blowing the whistling vessels, and he suddenly saw this vibrating cylinder-type object in the middle of the room, and it freaked him out, and he went running down the hall, and he found the professor, and you know, that this college professor who had invited him to the house and
yeah.
knew he was interested in all kinds of different techniques that ancient people used to use to enter spiritual states of mind. And he said, whatever, you know, we're doing, we need to stop until we figure this thing out. We've opened up a window to something. And when I talked to him a few months back, he said, yeah, I was reminding him of the experience that I had read about. And he said, I really thought that it might be something to do with another dimension. And close to the shamans' vibrations, and they had these different methods. Some of them did involve hallucinogens, but not all of them. The Tibetans had the singing bowls and the bells and such that are supposed
for
to...
For some them. Reason, though, sound does it. But how does that equate into UFO experiences?
Well, I know that there was... Well, let me just add that there was a Dr. Rick Strassman out at in New Mexico who did a DMT study.
And he's been on the program.
Okay, then I won't have to maybe explain quite as much, but just briefly for about a 5-year period, he had 60 volunteers that he administered these doses of this dimethyl tryptamine to.
Yeah, the DMT.
And that's found in this ayahuasca mix.
Mm-hmm.
And he had all these people describing these beings, and he would use the conventional Jungian archetypes and such to, you know, try to explain what's, you know, going on, his theory on it. And the people would say, no, these were, you know, they would be kind of upset with it. No, these were real beings, and this was real things happening, you know. To them, it was absolutely real. It just, a veil had been pushed aside. You know, it wasn't that they were... under the influence of a hallucinogen, they felt that they were actually seeing something that was real. So he had to change his approach, you know, and just ask them, what did they look like, what happened, you know, and not treat them so clinically. And he expected mystical and near-death type imagery, not the beings. And the beings, he was surprised, were quite similar in a lot of cases to the alien beings and abductions that he had read about literature from Harvard psychiatrist John Mack.